Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode 72. My name is Charles Lowell, a developer here at the Frontside and podcast host in training. With me today is Will.
Hello.
Hey, Will. And today we are going to be talking about accessibility in single page applications with Chris Van Houten, who is a developer at Q2. Hey, Chris, thank you for coming on the show. So today we're going to talk about something that's actually been on, I know, a lot of people's minds here and probably elsewhere on the internet. It's a topic that's getting a lot more attention, which is a good thing, and that's accessibility. And so we're going to explore the niche of accessibility as it applies to single page applications. Now, you're a front end developer at Q2. What initially got you interested in and passionate about, you know, accessibility in general?
Yeah, so I honestly feel my path to passion in this area has been a little bit unorthodox in a number of ways. You know, I basically started out in total apathy of this topic, and over the last year, it's turned into a genuine interest of mine. So, you know, about 3 years ago, I remember listening to an episode of Shop Talk Show with Dave Rupert and Chris Coyer, and they kind of went on this large rant about accessibility and why, you know, more developers need to be concerned and compassionate about it. Dave Rupert was talking about his contributions to the accessibility project. And I just remember sitting back and thinking to myself, you know, why would anyone who's, and this is back then, obviously, why would anyone who's, you know, blind want to use anything that I'm working on? And so I basically balked at the idea and just disregarded it entirely. And, you know, at the time I was just getting my feet wet with Ember, working on an application with a company here in Cincinnati. And I remember, like, we had these conversations about, hey, like, I noticed that we put this action or a clickable event on a div element. Should we not be doing that? Like, isn't that not, you know, something that we should be doing? And I remember sitting back and having this conversation and saying, well, like, the app isn't being crawled by SEO and Ember isn't yelling at us for doing it. It still works fine. So what the heck? Let's just go with it. You know, and basically every single app I've come into since then has basically adopted that same mindset even before I joined the team. So I know it's not just me who was thinking this. A lot of developers that have been kind of exercising the same way of doing their code.
Right. It's the path of least resistance. Everybody's got a job to do. Everybody's got features to deliver. And so, yeah, that kind of practice can be very easily self-perpetuating, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of it kind of caters to, I think a lot of developers just don't understand the semantic difference between a div or a label or a button or a link and how browsers can actually treat these different HTML attributes or HTML tags differently because of how assistive technology can utilize them for an impaired person's benefit. And so that's where I was a little over a year ago, basically. And when I first started at Q2, that first week, I got, you know, pulled into a discussion about design patterns, which is another passion of mine. And somehow that turned into me joining a group that was established to figure out how to tackle the task of making our large app accessible. Basically, we had a company come in and audit our application, and we got a big fat F on for accessibility. And so it's something that we said, okay, we need to start tackling this problem. And being that I just started at the company that week, I wasn't going to tell them no. But internally, I was panicking, saying, I got to figure out what this whole accessibility thing is and why it's important. And so I started looking for books, articles on the topic, trying to basically flood myself with information. And two things that really kind of transformed my way of thinking was actually a talk given by Nathan Hammond at the Wicked Good Ember in 2015, where he kind of shows an example of building an application without accessibility in mind. So basically doing what I was doing before, which is we're adding actions to div tags. We're not really caring about semantic HTML. We're just making the feature or the application work. But then what he does, which I think is super powerful, is he pulled up a colleague of his who is blind and had him try to use the application. And he just goes through and you can see the struggle, and he's actually vocalizing and talking about where he's wrestling with this application. And long story short, Nathan comes back up and makes a few adjustments to the HTML, has his friend come up again, and it's night and day difference just by changing the markup and by dropping in the Ember A11Y add-on, which helps with focusing the browser on certain areas of the content. You know, he was able to totally transform how this individual was able to use the app. Like, so for me, that was a super powerful to come in and see that and see someone actually struggle with a website that they were trying to use. And I think historically where I always saw accessibility was, oh, like, well, it only affects people who can't see. And I think that's the other area where I really started to had that paradigm shift is when I realized that this isn't just for people who can't see. It's for people who have motor difficulties, who can't use a mouse and have to use a keyboard instead. People who have various vision issues, whether that's cataracts, color blindness, glaucoma, dyslexia. So, I mean, this affects not just the HTML, but it also affects color contrast, the fonts that we're using. Like, it impacts every area of application design and development. And that's where I started to realize that that was where the paradigm shift happened in my mind, where I started thinking to myself, wow, we really need to start talking about this more and getting other developers on board in general on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it can be intimidating, especially when it feels like, you know, on a single page application, your divs have to do more, so to speak, in the sense that, I don't know, it feels your HTML is fatter. It's not just a thin layer, but your HTML is actually part of the UI.
Exactly. Yeah.
When it comes to having this paradigmatic shift that you're describing, when you're looking at your single page applications, are there any insights into the general structure of the application that you feel like you've gained that, you know, are kind of foundational, you know, they kind of transcend accessibility? Like, I guess what I'm saying is there any way that you become like a better developer or been able to recognize foundational patterns because of kind of having these insights surrounding accessibility?
So I've been working with Ember for about 3 or 4 years now, you know, basically since it was still in beta. And so I've really, over the last several years, have started to accumulate a lot of knowledge as to, you know, how we can utilize Ember to do a lot of the heavy lifting for us. And so when I started getting more passionate about the area of accessibility, first questions that came to my mind are, how can we use Ember to do some of the heavy lifting for us? And like, for example, some of the things that I had done was go through and start working on developing a couple components that basically cover a lot of things that I find ourselves doing on our apps a lot. So whether that might be a component to display an icon on the page or a component to display an input on the page. And what we're able to do is, you know, using Ember, we can say, hey, here's the icon I want to display. But if I don't happen to pass in a aria label attribute, for example, the component will add the aria hidden equals true for me. And so being able to really utilize the power of Ember to kind of do some of that stuff for us on the back side of things, you know, I guess you could say magically.
So wait, just let me stop you there for a second. So let me kind of unpack that example. So what you're saying is if I'm going to put an input on the page, if I actually don't assign an aria role, it's going to hide it from me?
No. So I was thinking of an icon component. So say if I'm using Font Awesome, for example, and I want to display the trash icon. So like I wrote a component for that, for our specific icon library that we're using. So we pass in the icon we want to display. Again, that can be the trash icon. And we can also pass in an aria label attribute to add a label to that span that will be read to the user. But if we don't pass that attribute in, the component will automatically add the aria hidden equals true attribute for us.
And
so
basically
it skips over it.
Yeah, so it won't be just garbage for a screen reader or someone navigating with the keyboard.
Yeah, otherwise the screen reader tries to read the content of the icon CSS, which is just the Unicode.
Right.
Yeah, and so really just trying to figure out, I feel like where I've spent a lot of my time, and especially in writing my blog series on this, was like, how can we use, you know, whether we're using React or Vue or Angular or Ember or whatever, how can we utilize the power of these single page application frameworks to do some of that heavy lifting for us in the background without us needing to explicitly define everything? And I'd say, especially when you work on a large team like what I work on currently, you know, we can't expect everybody to be extremely well versed in the area of accessibility. And so if we can do some of the work for them and just kind of encourage them to adopt these components in their daily workflow, it does some of the work for us. And so, yeah, that's one thing that we've been working on and talking a lot about at Q2 is basically this pattern adoption.
Right. So it sounds like, you know, kind of paraphrase, whether you're working in any framework, most of them have this concept of components. And so really leaning hard on that idea to make components, you know, at the very granular level, aware of, you know, their own accessibility. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Obviously, there's more I'll share as we go through the conversation about some of the other things that I've tackled in this area. But yeah, long story short, you know, being able to utilize and recognize that you had this extremely powerful JavaScript framework at your disposal to do some of the work for you. And so why not equip it to do just that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that follows into my next question, which is, so there are component level concerns. And if there are other component level concerns, I definitely want to hear about them. But, what immediately leaps to mind is, okay, so there are also kind of cross-cutting concerns of any single page application. What's the state of your URL? And, if you're using a router, some of the content on the page is going to be changing and others isn't. Like, how do you cope with that? What are the cross-cutting concerns of an application that span components? And then how do you cope with them?
Yeah, so I think one thing that comes to mind as you're talking is, the whole area of context switch awareness. So if I click a link, if I go from, the homepage of my application to my profile page, how does, a screen reader know that that content has now changed to present this new information to the user? And I know what we were able to do was we were able to drop in the focusing outlet component that's put out by the Ember accessibility team, which basically whenever we render to an outlet that's utilizing this focusing outlet component, it will focus the browser to that main area and start presenting that information back to the users. So, like, that's one area that was at the top of our list as we started tackling accessibility was we need to figure out this whole context switch awareness thing, because today, or this is back then, obviously, when we first got started, back then there was no way for a user to know when the page changed. And so they would just basically be sitting there waiting for any kind of feedback whatsoever to be presented back to them. And it just wasn't happening. And so, yeah, I would say managing focus is probably one of the top level concerns when it comes to single page applications, because it's a single page application. So when you click a link, the page isn't completely refreshing, prompting the screen reader to present the information back to the user. So that's one of the key areas I think of.
So what about things like asynchrony? Because a lot of times, these context switches are not, boom, boom, 1, 2. The content on which you want to focus isn't available yet. Usually the kind of the analog from a visual UI would be a loading spinner or a progress bar. How do you deal with those to kind of say, hey, your content is not quite ready? If you were made to wait, it's because we want your content to be of the highest quality.
Sure. Yeah, that's one area so we were able to drop in the focusing outlet components in our application, and it took care of, a good chunk of the work. But it seems like in our application, we're doing some things that might not be as conventional as the rest of the Ember community would like them to be. And so, we're not using might not be using the model hook as we should, so that it's hard for the page to know when the content's actually ready, when it's been rendered to the DOM to present back to the user. So that's one thing that I'm currently trying to tackle right now to figure out how we can remedy that problem. So I'd probably say that's honestly the challenge I'm working on right now. I don't have a solid answer to that one at the moment.
Irrespective of how it plugs into the tool that you're using, what would just be the desired interaction there, regardless of how you make it work?
I guess just conceptually what I would be thinking about is, how can we notify the user, hey, we're loading content right now. And whether that be that we have an alert box that has the ARIA alerts, basically attributes set on it, that we could pass in new, basically notifications to it to let the user know, hey, loading content, please wait. And then once that content resolves, focus them on that main outlet where the content has been displayed to read that content back to the user. So that's how we're trying to think about tackling this issue. But we have yet to have the time to implement it to see how it's going to work across all the different avenues of our application.
I did want to come back at the component level and, cover, are there any other ways that you can lean on Ember or lean on React or lean on Vue, or if you're using a component-oriented framework, just kind of talk a little bit more about how you use those to kind of unlock your application and make it more accessible.
One thing I can think of is a way that we can kind of enforce better usage of the framework that we're using is one thing that comes to mind, and it's a component that I kind of worked out in the blog series that I wrote, was building a form input component. And, typically, well, especially when you're trying to write an accessible app, I think about, how can we enforce certain patterns when other developers come in later on and want to add a field to a form or use this component somewhere else in the application. What are some ways that we can enforce that they're doing everything using the component correctly so that way it renders accessible markup. And so one thing that I kind of tinkered around with and that we actually just landed in our application is basically a form group component to where we pass in obviously the value that the input is bound to, but we also pass in a label that is tied to the input. And if we don't pass in the label, whenever you hit save and the app goes to refresh, if you don't pass in that label, there's an assert statement that basically fires off an error into the console and lets user know, hey, you're trying to use this component. You need to pass in the label attribute for the purposes of accessibility. And here's the instructions on how to do it. So we've been kind of toying around with this idea of enforcing patterns because, again, we have several dozen developers at Q2 that are working on this stuff. And they're not all, you know, wizards when it comes to accessibility, but how can we gradually start getting them to the place where they're adopting these patterns and best practices, you know? And so I would say doing things like that, we are kind of enforcing patterns in the usage of the components as well, is really key. And one thing that we implemented in our testing framework is the use of DQ Labs Axe engine to basically go through. We can pass it a chunk of HTML and it will give us any suggestions that it has to make that content more accessible. So we're using that in our test library right now in our test build and encouraging developers as they write new components, as they go in and modify components to, hey, throw these snippets in to make sure that the content that's being spit out here is accessible and then submit your PR again. So just trying to be more hands-on in that way.
So are you actually running a GitHub agent or, you know, something that's actually in the same vein as your test suite, or, you know, if you're taking like snapshotting with Percy for doing visual diffs, are you actually running kind of a third check, which is an accessibility check?
So right now we were able to land the Axe engine into our test build a couple months back. And so we're just slowly incrementing that over time. We have a couple challenges in the way of getting Percy implemented, but that is on our list of goals to have that running as well. But, you know, one thing that I really like about the Axe engine in particular is that if your check fails, if it finds improvements that you should be making, the nice thing about it is it also spits out a link to a page on DQ Labs' website that gives an explanation of what it found and basically educates your developers for you. And to me, I think that's huge because, again, we can't educate every single developer and expect them to be pros at this, but we can utilize tooling like the Axe engine or, you know, the Totali Chrome extension and stuff like that to kind of do some of that education for us. And as we work towards automating this further and further by using the Axe engine in our development side of things or using Percy on the test build as well. So yeah, there's all kinds of stuff you can do, but, you know, that's where we are right now.
I really like that idea because it, in comparison with what we talked about at the top of the show about how there's this path of least resistance that, you know, developers will follow quite naturally and quite rationally, which can lead to not accessible applications. It sounds to me like what you're doing is establishing the same path of least resistance, but having that path guide you towards accessible applications and, you know, saying, well, this path of least resistance thing, it can be an asset or a liability. So we might as well make it an asset.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we sit down once a week and we talk about, you know, whatever challenges we're trying to work through in terms of accessibility. We have a weekly meeting where we sit down and talk about it. And I feel like one of the key topics of those conversations is how do we get the other developers that are not in these meetings more aware, more informed, and more up to speed with this so that they care about it, so that they're working on it, and that it's part of their inner dialogue as they're writing out new features that are going to be deployed out to our clients. So yeah, it's lots of challenges there.
Yeah. So we've talked about, you know, you've got some of these problems that you catch. You're actually writing some assertions there on the test build. So you'll actually fail if there's certain things that aren't, if there's certain requirements that aren't met. But what are the things that are more intangible? How do those come up in terms of accessibility? Like, what are the things that you can't catch through automated testing?
Yeah. So right now, some of the things that we're having a hard time testing, which I, you know, Percy will help once we get that implemented, is, you know, contrast ratios and stuff like that. You know, that's really one of the key things that comes to mind for me when I think of the things that are a little bit harder to catch. And I think another thing that's hard to catch, especially that at the Axe engine and stuff like that won't necessarily catch, is the flow of your dialogue. So when I turn on a screen reader and it starts reading back this, you know, the page's content to me, sure, we can make it so that it doesn't read out the icon's character code and all that stuff. We can have it so that it presents the information we want back to us. But I think having that information presented back to the user in a way that's legible, that makes sense to them, is probably one of the bigger challenges that I've been working on a little bit. So like one thing that comes to my mind is like the reading of currencies or numbers. One thing that I found really helpful was DQ Labs put out a very thorough article on how the different screen readers, so JAWS, NVDA, Apple's VoiceOver, how they read different types of punctuation, different typographic symbols, how they read, you know, if we pass in $123.50, what does a screen reader actually read back to you? And that's where I've actually been spending some of my time lately, is building out some components that instead of reading back what the screen reader will read back by default, which would be $1, $2, $3, $5, $0, having it actually read back $123.50. And so basically writing a series of components that will do some of that, again, that heavy lifting for us. So that way our developers don't have to go in and manually add those ARIA labels, obviously. And so that's been a nice little challenge to where, you know, something that we are working on just testing right now and making sure that it works right, that there isn't any downsides to doing this. But, you know, I want a person using a screen reader or other types of assistive technology to hear the information as I am thinking about it. So when I see $123.50, I'm thinking in my head, that's $123.50, not single digits, one right after the other. And so, yeah, like those are things that a lot of the automated software isn't catching. It's not catching like, hey, your grammar's bad, or hey, this isn't making any sense to me. It's just catching like, are you passing in or applying the attributes to HTML elements that you should be? Are you using semantic structure in your headings and stuff like that? And so I think that's one of the areas where developers just need to get their hands dirty, turn on the screen reader, or use any array of different voiceover tools to actually listen to the content being presented back to them to see how it's presented. So,
yeah, it's almost the difference between kind of a syntax error versus a runtime error. Like we've got a lot of tools that can catch the syntax errors. And you can all, you know, you can put those in and catch where you have something that's malformed. But if the, you know, you can, some sentences can be perfectly formed, but make no sense. And it takes a human set of eyes to make sure if that content is coherent. But I do feel like maybe, so one of the things that we, you know, espouse here is that if you're going to ship applications to people, you need to be able to try and measure as closely as possible the environments in which the people will be using your software, so you can actually have an accurate measure of whether it works or not. And so, for example, in the Ember world, you know, lately in the stuff that we've been doing with acceptance testing in React, we admit, you know, people are going to be using a multiplicity of browsers to access this application. And so it's very typical to use Testem or use Karma to fire up 5 different browsers, you know, maybe, or, you know, go, which if you're using browser stack, you can do 50, you know, people are going to be using an IE 8.1 on an Edge or on a Surface. You know, they're going to be using Safari. They're going to be using Chrome, and those often surface those issues, but I feel like there's no access to the actual screen reading and assistive technologies to be able to make real assertions against those things. Like, so I'm imagining it would be cool if there was some way that in Testem or in Karma, you could have one of your browsers be like an assistive browser that could actually, you could assert, I want to assert that it read it as $153.25. And is that on the horizon? Is that even like possible? But it seems like something that we have to shoot for if we actually want to measure that these things are working, if we actually want to capture data points.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, if you look at the documentation on, you know, W3 for how these different HTML attributes should be treated by the browser or by the assistive technology, long story short is this is not how, in several cases, it's just not how certain screen readers are presenting the information back to you. It's not how it's treating the content. And that's, again, one of the areas I thought was really interesting about that DQ article on punctuation and typographic symbols, which is like, we should be able to expect that this software is operating at this level to present this information back to the user in such a way where it understands what the dollar symbol in front of a series of numbers means, but it just isn't there yet. You know, there's still work to be done. So I'm hopeful for the day where, you know, our screen readers are a lot more powerful in that capacity. And one thing that makes me a lot more hopeful about that is, I don't know if it's just because I've been more interested in, about this over the last year, but it does seem like I'm seeing a lot more people talk about accessibility. I'm seeing, you know, Apple putting out videos talking about the efforts that they're making to make their software more accessible. And so it does give me hope that there's a lot more visibility on this now. There's a lot more people, you know, fighting for this cause to cause these companies to come back and say, okay, we're going to start putting more effort into this. We're not just going to, you know, make a standard screen reader and ship it and just leave it there for 5 years and no one's going to touch it. But we're going to start making improvements. And one thing I did notice, you know, just over the last couple of months even, was that out of nowhere, when you use Apple VoiceOver in Chrome, which isn't typically how people use it, they typically use it with Safari. But if you use it in Chrome, it'll actually read currencies back to you as $123.50. And so when I came across that, I was kind of dumbfounded. But then I was thinking to myself, well, like the vast majority of people who are using screen readers aren't using this browser, but that's really interesting that they're doing this now. And so, but yeah, I dream of that day where we can basically run a series of markup through in a test or into a function and basically have it spit back, here's how a screen reader is going to present this back to you. Like, I'm hopeful for that day.
I mean, I'm wondering now, like, why don't major browser vendors, why is this not just a piece of a puzzle that, you know, comes? Like, when I download Firefox, you know, Firefox has access to my speakers. Why isn't there kind of a web standard for how screen readers will treat content? Maybe there's a effort underway.
I sure hope so. Yeah. I mean, looking through the documentation, we know how things are supposed to work, how, you know, we've agreed that they should work. And now we're basically just waiting for the different browser vendors and the different Microsoft and Apple to make the updates to their screen reader technology, as well as, you know, JAWS and NVDA. So I'm hopeful that these changes come soon, these improvements to the interface.
Yeah, well, it sounds like there's actually anytime there's a gap that you can see, that's an opportunity for someone.
For sure.
To write some software that has some real impact. I know certainly I would love to see some way to roll these things into our automated test suites.
Yeah, I mean, I've searched for it, but with no avail, and it's a little bit beyond my knowledge of how to build something of that caliber. So it's like, I hope someone else does it because I don't know how.
Well, maybe in a year, maybe in 2 years, maybe in 10, although hopefully a lot sooner than that.
Yeah, I would judge that at the speed of which things are going right now, I'm optimistic that we're going to have some much better solutions within the next year or two on this field. And so, especially with how much I'm seeing people talk about it now, how much it's becoming a part of the regular conversation of web development, application development, I'm really optimistic that we're going to see some strides in this area over the next couple of years.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask, with the time that we have left, I'm gonna ask one more question. Chris, there is something that I wanted to ask you, which is, let's say that I am a developer who is, you know, working on a team that is, you know, maybe it's big, maybe it's small. I've got an application, or I'm starting an application, and I have a desire to make it accessible. How do I establish that path of least resistance? What advice do you have for someone who's just about to take the first step on that journey to make sure that they have the outcome that they're looking for, which is, you know, the most accessible single page app that they can have?
Sure. No, I think that's a great question. And I would start out that answer by simply saying to encouraging you to be somebody who cares enough to speak up and become an evangelist, become an educator, and become an enforcer in your workplace for this work. You don't have to be the most knowledgeable person in the world on the topic. God knows I'm not. And I still feel weird when people come to me asking me, hey, how do I make this feature, you know, meet the guidelines to make it accessible to screen readers? But I'm passionate about this topic and I'm interested in learning as much as I can about it. So step one, just be an evangelist for it. Be interested in it. Care about it. I would say the next thing is just learn more about semantic HTML. I would say from a lot of the things that I've been trying to tackle with the application I'm working on, just simply writing semantic markup takes care of about 80% of my challenges. And just understanding what the different elements, what the different tags are for, and how screen readers and other assistive technology see those things. I'd say next, you know, to get started, I would say, you know, there's beginner, intermediate, and advanced stuff, I would say. So beginner, I would say go to the Accessibility Project, which is just a11yproject.com, and read through the content there. It's very entry level. You can probably read through most of the content within an hour or two and really start to get a grasp as to what your level of effort you're looking at in terms of your application. I'd say once you get through that, if you're still wanting to learn more, I would say go over to Mozilla's developer network, so MDN, and read through their documentation on the topic. Theirs is a little bit more exhaustive, but it's still really easy to read and really easy to grasp basically all the content that they have shared there. I'd say more advanced level is to actually go through, you know, all the documentation on the W3. It's a lot more verbose, covers a lot more use cases, has a lot more suggestions and just stuff for you to go over. You know, I'm still working through that information. There's so much of it. But I would say that that's a good place to get started with understanding the different attributes, what they're for, and just, you know, the importance of writing semantic HTML. I would say some definitely good things to start kind of tinkering with to find some of the low-hanging fruit in your application would be to use some of these assessment tools that are already out there. So you have the Totally little JavaScript snippet you can put in your, you know, Chrome favorites bar, or you can use the Axe engine, or they even have an Axe Chrome extension that you could pop up in your application to basically give you a report of some of the areas that you should be looking to make some improvements. Yeah, I think it's important to view accessibility kind of like how a lot of bloggers view SEO, is that there's always more work to be done. There's always improvements you can make, but the key is to take those first steps and start making those improvements. You know, one of the nice things about the Accessibility Project, and there's a couple other websites out there that have similar lists, they basically have a checklist for you to go down. Like if you're just getting started with accessibility, they have checklists of all the first things that you should be covering to get your app started in that realm to start making those improvements. And, you know, and if you guys do links in the show notes, I can definitely send you those links to those items to get people started. But, you know, another thing I find myself doing a lot is we'll be talking about something in our chat at work and I'll just go off into CodePen and mock something out in HTML and then see how the screen reader reads that content back to me and then kind of tinker with it and kind of do a little bit of self-discovery in how this all works together. And yeah, so there's a lot of options out there. I know I just threw a lot at your listeners, but I'd say it all kind of starts with being someone who cares about the topic and cares enough to start asking others to care as well.
I think that's a fantastic answer and a great note to end on. But before we go, obviously we will include those things in the show notes, but also the other thing that we're going to include is a link. You actually, I understand, have a series of blog posts related to all the things that you've been talking about, which we will also include.
Awesome. Thanks.
Everybody, go read it. Thank you so much, Chris, for coming and talking with us about accessibility. I think you're right. It is a topic that's gaining a lot more traction and a lot more mindshare in the mainstream. That can only be a good thing.